Joining us right now, it's Fridays, it's 4, it's our very good friend, Ann Coulter. And let's start there. Don't we think Vladimir's kind of rooting for the commie here?
That's actually a great point. As long as they're going to keep talking about a non-communist, normally corrupt Russia as if this is the Soviet Union. And by the way, we really could have used their help back when it was a nuclear-armed communist power encroaching on one country. I mean, I wrote about this in Resistance is Futile. Having written the book Treason, they've spent 50 years defaming Joe McCarthy, Whitaker Chambers, holding up Alger Hiss, a Soviet spy, as as proved by the Venona Papers. It turns out J. Edgar Hoover and a few people in a secret army program knew all along that Joe McCarthy was right, that Alger Hiss was a commie, that Whitaker Chambers was right. The most crazed, fevered John Bircher had no idea how bad it was. And when the Venona Papers was finally released, I think it was the early 90s, thank you to Senator Patrick Moynihan, he said, let's start decrypting these things. Oh, and by the way, only about 2% of the Venona, we are us reading secret Soviet cables, only about 2% have ever been decrypted decrypted at all. How about a government program to decrypt the rest of them and find out exactly how many journalists and Hollywood types and Democratic politicians were working for the Soviet Union of old, the one of the Stalin show trials, the one that's invading country after country, destroying Poland, Hungary. I mean, a regime as monstrous as Hitler. No, back then, the entire Democratic Party and the media were on the side of the totalitarian regime with nuclear weapons pointed at us. And I was thinking about this recently, not only because they won't shut up about Russia, but the two biggest issues for the Democratic Party are, number one, global warming. We won't be able to prove them wrong for 1,000 years. Number two, Russia. If only there were something like the Venona Papers, because that was like, you know, and here it is, 50 years later, we got the DNA evidence. We were right, you were wrong.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, I wrote about this in Resistance is Futile. I think it's one of the most amusing chapters, simply by quoting these lunatics working for Mueller, who have suddenly discovered the Internet and Facebook. Yeah, there were Russians fooling around with Facebook and starting these groups and Twitter, you know, woke blacks and that sort of thing. But they were on both sides. It just seems they were trolling. There was no clear effort. And the idea that them spending whatever it ultimately amounted to, including you know, Facebook pages promoting Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
That these people, who, by the way, were not working for Putin, they have friends. Oh, I mean, the left's argument is any Russian must be being directed by Putin. You're just piling assumption, dubious assumption on top of dubious assumption. But when you look at what the actual Facebook pages and the Twitter pages were, and the way that was released to the public with you know, Brian Williams saying, and today Robert Mueller unveiled a vicious campaign by our arch enemy to turn American against American. This was, you know, 0.00001% of all campaign spending, these stupid Facebook ads. And we have to hear about this whenever they, you know, switch off from global warming or some new lie about Trump. As long as Trump is in office, they're never going to give up on this. Just remember, these are the ones who defended Stalin's show trials. Thanks for the help when we could have used it, guys.
Ann Coulter, you can get all of her stuff at AnnCoulter.com. And actually, Ann, I got to tell you, I actually used your recent column 2 days ago when it hit on Wednesday, even before I brought you onto the program, because it was so brilliant, as you talk about the roots of the Boy Scouts filing Chapter 11 here. Because it was never the left's intention to inflict their ideology on the Boy Scouts and change the Boy Scouts. They were always just trying to destroy the Boy Scouts because they hated the Boy Scouts.
Yes, and when you read, I spent a lot of time, I couldn't put it all in the column, when you read about the Boy Scouts, what a wonderful organization it was. Founded in 1910, the great outdoorsman, Teddy Roosevelt was a huge Boy Scout booster. But the idea behind it, curiously, had a lot to do with the massive immigrants coming to America then. And they didn't want these young immigrant boys standing on street corners with their sunken chests, smoking cigarettes, thieving, getting in trouble. And they noticed that young men, it started in England actually first and then came across the ocean. It was some great hero, I mean, every boy I've mentioned this to knows exactly who I'm talking about, of the Boer War, came home and he's writing about his triumphs in England and noticed, oh, young men think this is really cool. They want to know how to survive in the woods and tie knots and shoot guns. But you know, it taught young men self-reliance, courtesy, kindness to others. Years later, there was a Lou Harris and Associates poll, this I did put in the column, or study, I guess it was, that found that men who had been Boy Scouts were more likely to put a premium on honesty than men who had not been Boy Scouts as little boys. So, you know, the patriotism, the courtesy, the decency that the Boy Scouts, the self-reliance and machismo, all these chivalrous, manly virtues. Oh, my gosh, you're on the fighting side of liberals with an organization like that. So they've just been suing, demanding deference to the Holy Trinity of the three G's, girls, gays, and the godless. never occurs to them to start their own organization, calling it Girl Scouts.
Right.
How about
that? Imagine
that. No.
It's got a nice ring to it.
But it's just hilarious that the people our age and above remembering this, the young people won't remember this, is a huge hoo-ha back in 2000, late 90s, early 2000s, demanding the left, the media, the New York Times ethicist, the New York Times editorial page, every Democratic politician right up to Obama, demanding that the Boy Scouts allow gay men to take little boys, 13-year-olds, camping alone in the woods in isolated areas where they could not be observed.
Right.
And it turns out this has been a perennial problem. So within 10 years of the Boy Scouts founding in 1910, they started a list of what they call the perversion files, because obviously this isn't to say that all gays are or
no, and it's not exactly. This has to do with the exact policy that was inflicted upon a private organization that didn't want the policy.
Right, but if you look at it from the other end, we're going to start with child molesters here. What kind of organization would be attractive to a child molester? Well, the Boy Scouts figured that out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And so they were very aggressive, much more aggressive than other groups. And then liberals come along and start demanding that this one pillar, I mean, I don't think the Girl Scouts would have been wild about having single heterosexual men take 13-year-old girls out to the woods alone.
No, I don't think they would, because logically you just sort of look at that, connect the dots, and say not a good idea. We got to leave it there, but it's a great column, as always, Ann. Always love talking to you, and I appreciate you joining us today. You bet.
No one on food stamps should be allowed to vote.
Mr. Reagan.
Okay, so I titled this video a bit provocatively because, of course, I have to make my titles a little clickbaity. But in this case, the clickbait title actually underrepresents the severity of this video. The truth is, I think that no one who benefits from any kind of government assistance should be able to vote. Now, perhaps we can find some exceptions to this and we could talk that out, but the basic proposal that I'm trying to make here is this. People living off the government will always vote for more government, and this is a problem. The right to vote in an election only makes logical sense if the voter has something at stake. What do I mean by a stake? What I mean is simply this. The fundamental role of government is to take tax money from the people and then to use that money to perform various services that are supposed to then be beneficial to those people. If the government could run without taking any money from the people, we wouldn't have to deal with the question of stakes. But since the government does take money from the people, we have to consider how much money that the government should take and whether or not the money is better in the hands of the government or remaining in the hands of the people. And that simple question, how much money is taken from the people, that question is crucial. Now, if none of your money is being taken by the government, you have zero stake in the government's use of tax money. And as I said, if you're the recipient of some of that money, you will inevitably want the government to siphon more of it from the taxpayers. You don't have a stake. So what does it matter to you how much money the government takes? Take it all. The point is, as a taxpayer, if you're taking my money, I deserve the right to have some small say in how that money is used. If you're one of the people who is being given the money, you should have zero say in how my money is spent. We know what you're going to vote for, to take more of my money to be redistributed to you. Those who take cannot have a say in how tax money is used. Only those who give must have a say. It's simple logic. Now, before we get even crazier, I have to sell you something. Stop paying for overpriced insurance. How many of you are tired of simply paying too much for auto, health, and life insurance? Cut your insurance rates substantially and save big with PatriotRates.com, an American insurance company that you can trust, owned by veterans. Patriot Rates sources competitive pricing on auto, health, and life insurance and will always have your back when it comes to finding the best quote to fit your needs. My girlfriend just the other day bought her first car, and I myself got our insurance cheaper using their service. You have nothing to lose. Visit PatriotRates.com for a free quote on auto, health, and life insurance and stop paying for overpriced insurance. Visit PatriotRates.com today for your free quote. All right, now let's consider who else gets government assistance and should or should not be able to vote. How about government employees? Why the hell should government employees vote? Hey, public school teacher, do you think we should tax the public more so we can give you teachers more money and better benefits? Of course you do. From now on, government employees, you don't get a vote. And you know what? My sister-in-law is a public school teacher. Sorry, Elise, you don't get a vote. Our men and women in the military? You guys are, of course, exempt from this restriction. If you are risking your life to protect America, you need the right to vote. Maybe you guys should get two votes. And another thing, why the hell does Congress vote to give themselves a raise? Shouldn't the public decide that? From now on, Congress, you don't get a raise unless we say you get a raise. People will argue, but if we lower the pay rate too low, nobody will want to be a congressman. No, you know who won't want to be a congressman? People who want to get rich from being a career politician. And anyway, the public aren't so stupid as to bring down the congressional pay rate so low that they're going to get crap congressmen and senators. And another thing, we've heard Democrats talk about pushing the voting age down to 15 in recent years, right? They don't have any convincing arguments for this, of course. It's obviously a thinly veiled attempt to gain a massive new voting bloc for Democrats. Well, you know what? It's not a terrible strategy. So I have a strategy of my own to benefit Republicans. I propose pushing the voting age up to 30. And this proposal actually does have some convincing arguments behind it. In my experience, yes, some people are very knowledgeable about politics at a very young age, but not every 18-year-old is Ben Shapiro. We've all seen the Jimmy Kimmel dumb people on the street videos, but in case you haven't, watch this.
Can you name any country on this map?
Yeah. Africa?
That's a continent.
Oh, God.
Can you name any countries in Africa?
God, no. Who knows stuff like that? Was this Africa?
No, again, that's South America.
No idea.
Can you name a country in South America?
Okay, this is South America.
Yes, can you name a country in it?
No, I can't.
Did you go to high school?
Yes.
Did you go to college?
Yeah, that's the sad part.
These people are voting. In general, 18-year-olds have very little knowledge about politics. A real understanding about politics tends to be developed throughout one's 20s. Now, I get that these kids think that they have something at stake, but once you've got a career, a spouse, a child, maybe a business, possibly a dog, only then do your values really coalesce. It's only once you've built a life that you have the perspective you need in order to vote in your own best interest and in a way that's ethical and rational. Of course, Ann Coulter had an interesting suggestion about voting.
Women should have the right to vote, but should they vote?
Well, as you know, my position is women should not have the right to vote.
Good.
It's very popular on college campuses.
Yeah, I mean, we'll lose the odd N as collateral damage, but...
No, we can still write books. We can run for office.
You just can't vote.
Exactly.
I'm not going to touch that one. But you know what's funny? When I wrote the script for this video, I knew that Ann Coulter had said this, but I didn't remember where I'd heard it. I actually didn't hear it from that clip. I heard it from a different clip. But I had to go around digging, and I found this one. And in that same interview, she says this.
How about if you don't pay tax, you can't vote?
That was what my father always said.
Really? I've just been obsessed with this recently, thinking, you're not a customer. You don't have a say in how this restaurant goes. That's like strangers coming in off the street, homeless men, and saying, I want this on the menu, and then walking out.
Well, technically what he said was, you could vote if you weren't getting back stuff from the government. As long, if you're breaking even.
Okay.
Okay, but not if you're getting more from the government than you're paying in. Well, you're just voting for more stuff for yourself.
So obviously there are conservatives out there who have been thinking the same things that I'm saying now. Another good idea about voting restriction: there is this old rule about land ownership. I know social justice warriors will start screaming racist and sexist right about now, but I don't think that stuff applies anymore. There are no gender or race restrictions on land ownership in America at the moment. So, I mean, why are we not going back to that rule? It's a great idea. If you own land, you have a physical piece of the country that you're invested in. You have something to protect. You have a stake in the health of the country. Buying American soil is an investment in America. Now, this can be a house or a business or farmland, whatever kind of land you want. But in order to vote, you must own land. And another thing, from now on, Congress, no stock investment. Investing in the stock market by any congressman or senator is illegal. Same for your spouses. Now, I understand that will limit those who are willing to run for Congress. I know. And you know what? I'm okay with that. One of the most corrupt schemes of Congress is insider trading. This has been going on for ages and it needs to stop. How is it that the government body that regulates the stock market is permitted to invest in the stock market? It's insane. Now, I gotta thank my father for giving me the idea for this video. Thanks, Dad. He mentioned it and I ruthlessly stole the idea to make this video. I was like, that's brilliant. I'm making that into a video. Anyway, if you like this one, it's due to my father. Well, that's it for me. Thanks for watching. And remember, it's not that our liberal friends are ignorant. It's just that they know so much. That isn't so. Good night.
I think you all know that I've always felt the 9 most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. Mike Devers, in his book, said that I had a short attention span. Well, I was going to reply to that, but what the hell? Let's move on to something else.
Joe Biden brought executives from the company in to meet Barack Obama. We know that Elizabeth Warren's familiar with them because we actually have corporate records where she signed as a witness. If the Trumps did this, there would be outrage. I would be outraged.
Well, your last book really ruffled some feathers and, mm-hmm. and sort of stirred the waters. This one is having the same effect, maybe because it's an election year. Tell me, when you're talking about profiles in corruption, who should we be looking at?
Well, I think you should be looking at any political figure because I believe corruption is something that anyone's capable of. But you have to really focus, I think, on political figures who want more political power. Hmm. And the reason I focused in this book on progressives is they're unique, Governor. I mean, unlike moderates or conservatives or classical liberals, they're saying we need a whole lot more power to solve the problems of this country, which, of course, it's questionable whether they would. Yeah. And that makes them unique. So they need special attention because they're asking for so much more power.
You have talked about that there's not just Hunter and Joe Biden and all of the Burisma oil and gas things in the Ukraine, but there are other Bidens that are a part of the family business, if we will. Explain that.
Yeah, I call them the Biden Five. It's a little bit like the Jackson Five, but it's more a corruption-oriented.
And I don't think Joe's got the moves of Michael, that's for sure.
I think you're right about that. But really, it's endemic in the way the Bidens operate. You have Hunter Biden, who's done these deals in China and Ukraine and Kazakhstan. You've got his brother James. I mean, consider this. A friend of the family goes to the vice president's office in November of 2010, when Joe Biden is vice president. He set up a new construction company. 3 weeks after that meeting in the White House, he adds James Biden, Joe Biden's brother, as executive vice president of the construction company. Now, here's the problem. James doesn't have any experience in construction, in major project management, none of that. 6 months after that, this new construction company with a vice president's brother as the executive vice president lands a contract worth $1.5
billion.
Billion dollars to build 100,000 homes in Iraq, funded by taxpayers, funded by the Obama-Biden administration.
So we paid for it.
Yes.
But the brother of the vice president is making some serious bank because he happens to be related to the vice president, not because he's a construction genius with a long history.
That's exactly right. And you see this with the Bidens and over again. You have a situation with his daughter is married to an individual who started a business called Startup Health that was literally launched in the Oval Office. Joe Biden brought executives from the company in to meet Barack Obama. They get special placement at this federal conference. And then over the next 5 years, Joe Biden as vice president is going and briefing the investors and partners of this company in private about healthcare policy in the Obama administration. If the Trumps did this, there would be outrage. I would be outraged. But the Bidens did it, and it's standard operating practice.
Well, that leads to the obvious question. I've not heard this stuff in the mainstream media. I don't think it's on CNN or ABC, NBC, MSNBC. Why not?
A great question. I think for a couple of reasons. And I've worked with CNN. I've worked with ABC. I've worked with NBC. The situation is this. There are some good reporters there, but I think the management there essentially does not want to go after certain people. It's outright political bias. But the added problem, Governor, is resources. I mean, this book took 18 months of research. There's more than 1,100 footnotes. There's no anonymous sources. It's very hard work to dig up this stuff. So it's a combination of political bias, and it's a whole lot of work to get this information. The media just doesn't seem to be interested or capable of doing it anymore.
It's one of the things that I've admired most, first about Clinton Cash, which was a blockbuster bestseller. This book was number one on Amazon before it ever hit the market.
Right.
So the pre-orders for it were phenomenal. But you do document everything. This is not a high place source.
Right.
Or an anonymous leaker told me.
Right.
This is time, place, date. I think it gives the book far more power. And it makes the message a little more hard to dispute. I want to move to Elizabeth Warren because, again, I'd never heard this stuff on media. But there's some issues regarding Elizabeth Warren's son-in-law. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so Elizabeth Warren has corruption issues herself, her daughter. There's questions about some of the business work that she's done. But her son-in-law, Sushil Tyagi, he's from India, very bright guy, met Elizabeth Warren's daughter at the Wharton Business School, has a whole host of businesses based in India and elsewhere. And we know that Elizabeth Warren's familiar with them because we actually have corporate records where she signed as a witness for some of the corporate documents. He set up a company called Tricolor Film that said on its website, recently taken down, that their business model, they were going to make films funded by foreign governments. What we discovered, and it's all laid out in the book, is one of those films was actually a film financed by the government of Iran. He actually names in the film credits, he's the sole producer of this feature film. He names the government entities that fund it. These are the same government entities that are involved in All Quds Days, these sort of anti-Semitic celebrations that take place in Iran. And he actually, in the film credits, the son-in-law of Elizabeth Warren, thanks the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Air Force for their
In
the film, for their contribution. I don't know what their contribution was, but it was obviously something. And this is, of course, very troubling. If we're going to be worried about politicians having stock in, you know, General Electric or companies, we need to be concerned about commercial ties their family has with foreign governments.
Well, Elizabeth Warren has been so critical about any corporate ties. Corporations shouldn't make money.
Yeah.
She's made a lot of money.
She
and has a lot of money on corporate boards and a lot of money speaking to big corporations. I don't hear her apologizing for that.
No, she doesn't. I mean, she played the oldest game in the book, Governor. She was hired by Congress in 1993 through 1996 to help write bankruptcy laws in the United States. And she says in legal documents that some of those were incorporated into law in 1994. Well, what did she do? She went to corporations and said, "You want to hire me to help you navigate the laws that I wrote?" And she got paid by major corporations, Dow Chemical, Armstrong Worldwide, you know, $1,000 an hour. She made millions of dollars doing this. It's the oldest game of cronyism and corruption in the book. And she helped corporations navigate the bankruptcy laws that she was paid by taxpayers to help write.
I'm confident that any of these people who get into a debate with Donald Trump, should they be the nominee, will have to face some of this on the debate stage. But we're probably not going to hear it until then.
Right.
Bernie Sanders is also a person. It's been kind of interesting. He's a socialist, believes that we basically ought to give 90% of our income to the government.
Yeah.
He's done pretty well for a guy that was living off a senatorial salary.
He has. It's funny. You know, he used to, for about 38 years, he would always say our national politics shouldn't be dominated by billionaires and millionaires. Well, about 3.5 years ago, he dropped the millionaire part because he became one.
He is one.
And part of the reason he became one is he figured out this secret, one of the dirty secrets, you know it because you know Washington well, which is if you're running a campaign, you can hire a media buyer to do your media buys, to buy television and radio ads, and that media buyer is entitled to a commission, 15% commission, and you don't have to disclose it anywhere. Well, Bernie figured this out, and you know what he did? He made his wife the media buyer. So she got the commission off of media buys for his congressional campaigns. And by the way, she had no background in media buying. She'd never done it before. That's just one of the tricks. He, over the course of 30 years, has steered taxpayer money, campaign money, and other funds, nonprofit funds, to his family members and has helped make them very wealthy.
What makes you personally most nervous looking at our government and, as you talk about in the book, profiles in corruption?
What makes me most nervous is that there are, unfortunately, people on both sides of the aisle that like that way of doing business. Mm. They don't want to address it. They don't want to deal with it. I think it's one of the reasons why Donald Trump is such a disruptive force. Yeah. You know, he's called the Bidens out on this, and it makes a lot of people nervous. So my concern is there's going to be complacency about this in the Capitol. Everybody outside of the Beltway is outraged, and we need to let our elected officials know we care about this stuff. Yeah. This matters because it affects the type of government we're going to get.
Don't you think it bothers a lot of the Washington swamp rats that he paid his own way to get there? In other words, he was not beholden to a donor class, as most politicians have to be.
Right.
And then when he got there, he doesn't even take a salary. He's actually taken a dip in income to do it. And I'm sure that is an outrageous affront to the way it's played.
Exactly. And he's also not beholden to political consultants.
Yeah.
The political consulting class, you're familiar with it. Yeah. We're all familiar with it. And these are individuals that are paid large sums of money to say, here is how you're supposed to talk to the American people, and here's what your policy should be. Trump threw that book out and
yes,
said, no,
he did.
I'm not going to hire any of those people. I'm going to do it this way. I think it's part of his appeal.
Yeah.
And I think on the left, that's part of the appeal of Bernie Sanders. I disagree with Bernie's ideas. I think they're wrong. But I think part of the reason there's appeal to him is he's kind of doing that on the political left in the same way Trump is doing it.
There's a genuine authenticity in that. Peter, great to have you here.
More compassionate, the stern father with boundaries who maybe isn't the cool dad, or the compassionate mom who spoils the child? Only in this instance, we're not talking about the most disastrous result being a petulant toddler, but we're talking about grown, lost adults finding themselves exponentially more likely to end up in prison, depressed, and part of a demographic that lives up to a 40% attempted suicide rate, both pre and post-op. So question of the day. These days, of course, it's very common advice to be healthy. People want to be, they're more health conscious than ever. And you don't want to be injecting yourself with copious amounts of unnatural hormones.
No.
Why do you think that logic all of a sudden goes out the window when it comes to hormone replacement therapy for transgenders? And you know, let's take the kids out of the equation and puberty blockers. We've talked about that. I'm just talking about adults. Have you actually taken the time to think of the toxic impact that adding exogenous estrogen to the male body could have? Let me know. This is something we don't really talk about a lot. We talk about what people want, what the societal ramifications. What about the potentially early cancerous graves? You let me know. If you think that's compassionate, I think you're a sociopath. Okay, so I know we got a lot of heat, as well as a lot of positive feedback for when the transgenders attack video, which we didn't ask for.
No.
I am not the hero you deserve. By the way, the signal... just a severed we'll bleep it. It's fine. They must need me. And there's a fidget spinner. So, for context, for those who missed it, of course, at the recent Change My Mind the women's march that we did, I was assaulted by not one, but two. Count it, two transgenders. Roll clip.
Sick and tired of this fucking debate. Men need to respect women, period. Piece of living garbage ass dumpster fire trash gum on the bottom of my shoe.
A country where guilty until proven innocent.
That's
yes,
so funny.
We'd be rotting in a jail, but I know of. Ooh.
So when you
Steven
take
Seagal, School every of time. Running,
when you take into account that only 0.6% of Americans identify as transgender, statistically, being assaulted by two, it's like I hit the Mega Ball crap pot.
Wow.
It's unbelievable.
So
at this
lucky.
At this women's march, 0.6% of the population committed 100% of the felonies. It should be noted, by the way, that the sample data has a margin of error of plus or minus 0%. Also, it's entirely made up by me. So
it's very reasonable.
Yeah.
Here's something else that's important. When we actually sort of looked into wider media coverage, and I want to get into the empirical, obviously, some of the data that might surprise you. But it seems anecdotally at first, and I think you probably know this, but you don't necessarily know how it correlates with statistics. It would seem that the transgender population has been very much overrepresented in the realm of public. I believe the clinical nomenclature here is public meltdown childlike freakouts.
Yes.
You're going to give me my f***ing money back.
Excuse me, sir. There's a young man in here. Excuse
Ed me, Sheeran. Ma'am. It is ma'am.
Oh, boy.
Once again, ma'am.
Ed Sheeran at the counter. It's just uncomfortable.
Yes, sir. Once again, it's ma'am. Motherfucker, take it outside. If you want to call me sir again, I will show you a f***ing sir. Motherfucker.
How can you?
That's exactly my point, sir.
He be pleading guilty? What?
Oh,
don't
Lord.
Don't touch me. Don't
go.
Touch me.
Ah! Go.
Stop!
Keep in mind, that is the transgender male to female who was demanding that other
Get
women wax his beautiful balls. Her beautiful balls.
That's right.
Get away! Get the fuck away
her
from me!
Feminine, wonderful, me. hairy balls.
Whoever here want to fight, we can fight. I'm in the parking lot. I've been in the parking lot, ready to fight. Do a goddamn sir walk around the motherfucker in the world with a goddamn titties. You would I would have told you I was a goddamn sir. A sir don't walk around nowhere with no goddamn titties and ass on their back.
Other than you.
You and the horse that you rode
Apparently.
On, you funky, sour smelling motherfucker. I was gonna leave you the fuck alone. Now I'm gonna cause a goddamn scene, you son of a bitch. You gonna take these goddamn shoes back today because any goddamn girl who comes up in here but after me with titties and ass on her motherfucking back will be respected and she will not
Goodness.
Be called a goddamn. Damn, sir. Fuck you and your mama, your sister, your brother, your uncle, and your cousin, you bitch ass nigga. Fuck you.
Oh,
take this shit back, mama. Okay.
I'm a ma'am.
They don't pay enough
I'm a
pay
ma'am.
Less.
My ID say female.
Is that a Jimmy Fox character?
No, I think so.
Know your pronouns. Know your pronouns. Know your pronouns. Know your pronouns.
Crackhead, a pronoun?
Know your fucking pronouns. It's a world out here. Stupid.
It's a world.
Suck my dick, like you said, man.
Oh, come on.
Whoa. Wait, but that's.
It actually sets a better precedent.
Oh, this one's not funny.
Yeah,
wow.
That's
shocking. An axe.
And I don't think the previous sentence was actually.
Oh, fuck.
I think she hit with
a.
Oh, God, are you serious?
So,
I would have to say
a broad my conclusion there is that those are some very hormonally balanced people.
Yes, exactly.
I wasn't ready for that last clip.
Well, I know we know that anecdotally because these stories happen all the time, but what does the empirical data tell us? And I think it's important. We often hear, right, that transgender individuals are more likely to be the victim of violent crimes. But here's something important. That's what we hear about a lot, not them perpetrating the crimes. Most of these reports, they just list the number of transgender individuals who've died violent deaths at some point in the past year. So really, actually, as far as I could tell, it all stems from one tracking study from one place. I want to read you the direct quote from humanrightscampaign.org, a leftist website. In 2008, advocates tracked at least 26 deaths of at least of transgender non-conforming people in the United States due to fatal violence. Some of these cases involve clear anti-transgender bias. Well, I would think all of them would. In others, the victim's transgender status may have put them at risk in other ways, such as forcing them into unemployment, poverty, homelessness, and or survival sex work. So of the 26 deaths, when you actually look at them cited, most of them they have no relation to the victim's transgender status. They could have been killed in a carjacking or a robbery, but because they're trans, it's violence against the trans community. It could have just as likely been violence against the car-possessing community,
or
as it's known, Detroit. Let's contrast this with the hard numbers that we have that are undeniable in relation to transgenders being the ones who commit the crime. So yeah. Lambda Legal, a pro-LGBT legal organization, they report that 1 in 6 trans individuals have been in prison.
Oh my gosh.
Now, we do need to have some scale here, right? Some context. So let's compare that to the average lifetime incarceration rate for cis men, commonly referred to once upon a time as men. It's 1 in 9. Yeah. And it's far higher than for cis women, which is 1 in 56. 1 in 6 for transgender individuals, compared to 1 in 56. So see, ladies, trans women, they're just like you. Yeah. Knock, knock, who's there? Just a trans male to female at your porta potty with a 1 to 6 chance of committing a serious crime. I mean, I just can't. It's like the big bad wolf huffing and puffing and blowing the porta potty next door. So the point is, build your house out of brick. Why would you do it out of straw or sticks? It doesn't make any sense. And that pig had to carry the weight. I think the other one should have been eaten by the wolf.
Yeah.
That's what the takeaway is here. And there's another
meat segment.
Another long-term study in Sweden, they found that transgender individuals were increasingly likely to be convicted of any crime, including violent crime, specifically following sex reassignment surgery. Now, leftists would probably have you believe that that's because the entire police force are transphobic. You know, tucked, don't shoot. I understand that was a meme, but it was not entirely accurate. Here's the truth, and this even for people who are the most progressive in the world, it doesn't stem from a place of hate. Sometimes they get confused with the as to whether you're a woman or a perceived woman, but then you snap them right back in line by demanding they your then they understand it.
Yeah.
The confusion, the fog lifts. Oh,
there's truth.
She's ladylike. So let's form a hypothesis here. You know what? Not even I just want to pose a question. Could transgender behavior that we see here possibly be linked to the fact, no one talks about this, that we're injecting these people with unbelievable amounts of hormones, the long-term effects of which we don't really know. And what we do know definitively at this point is not good.
Yeah.
So keep in mind that this is something we talk about all the time in society, that we're warned about injecting unnatural hormones. Look at the current discourse around anabolic steroids in sports, right? All kinds of warnings, and a lot of them are accurate. They can harm fertility, psychological well-being. The list goes on and on and on. Now, hell, let's look at the discussion regarding hormones in chicken.
Yeah.
In milk. They believe that young women are getting their periods early because of hormones in milk, but then you realize they don't put hormones in milk in the UK, and so it doesn't really make any sense because titties just get bigger. One of the primary reasons that people even eat organic or they avoid BPA plastic is because of what's referred to as, they often, if you read any of these mom green blogs, they refer to them as endocrine disruptors.
Yeah.
Often I think the term is xenoestrogens, and that these chemicals allegedly mimic estrogen in the body, which when they are basically provided in excess, they're believed to be cancerous.
Yeah.
Now, when that's it comes to changing genders, however, using the exact same hormones, injecting them directly or taking them sublingually in a pill form, suddenly we're pushing them on kids and there couldn't possibly be any health risks because the science is out. Well, you know what? Actually, that's not the case. We'll get into some more science. But first, hit the notification bell. Hit all notifications because subscriptions don't mean a whole lot. And do subscribe to the show on iTunes as well if you haven't joined Mug Club. That's the place where you can watch all of this. Should we be banned? New videos every weekday at 9 Eastern.
9 Eastern.
Yes.
Let's get into this. Estrogen is something we should talk about in the psychiatric problems.
Yeah.
And does that relate to this statistically undeniable and startling, honestly, the more I looked into it, violent behavior? A few different things. We can start with estrogen, progesterone. These are seen as feminine hormones. Obviously, men have these hormones as well, but in lower amounts, just like women have testosterone, but in lower amounts. So high progesterone has already been linked to suicide. Right, progesterone is included quite a bit in male to female transitioning therapies, and we've already talked about the 40-something percent attempted suicide rate pre and post-op for transgenders.
Right.
Women already have higher rate of depressive psychological disorders than men, and sometimes this is thought to be linked to complicated. Obviously, this is a simplification. I'm not an endocrinologist. There are only a handful of really good ones in the country, but it's often thought that it's linked to the interactions of estrogen and female-related hormones. Now, we also know that when people go off steroids, there's no argument about this, they can become depressed, they can become suicidal, they can become very moody. Often it could be perceived as bipolar disorder. And this is something that is important. Again, the endocrine system is so intricate and complex, and one hormonal signaler will affect another one, and it's really difficult to sift through all of it. But they all do play a role, a yin and yang, as it relates to other hormones in the body. So a good example of this is the thyroid, right? A lot of people know this who have hyperthyroid. Every single fat person out there uses that as an excuse. I have a thyroid thing. thyroid. It doesn't make you 900 pounds. Yeah. It doesn't put you on a TLC show, but I understand it may help you. You may be holding some water weight. Anyway.
You have an ice cream thing, not a thyroid thing.
You have an ice cream truck thing.
Yeah. It's kind of true.
So the thyroid plays a big role in people's emotions, depression. Yeah. Thyroid levels are dramatically affected by estrogen. As a matter of fact, sometimes people with thyroid disorders are misdiagnosed very often as bipolar or as having some kind of a psychiatric condition because they manifest themselves the same way. Add on top of that, that male to female transgenders, they face a, outside of hormones, if you have kids, warning, 35% drop in ability to achieve orgasm.
Oh,
hey, by
no.
the way, mm-mm. can anyone here mm-mm. guess the orgasm rate for cisgender men?
That's
it's not a trick question. It's 100%. Ladies, we're very easy to please. And by the way, not to mention, of course, this is really important. The connection between estrogen and breast cancer in women is well established, right? If a woman has breast cancer, one of the first things they put them on is I think it's anastrozole, arimidex. Mm-hmm. It's an aromatase inhibitor, which prevents people from converting certain hormones to estrogen. That's what a lot of bodybuilders take, or people who, men who have naturally high estrogen levels. It's something that prevents hormonal signalers from converting to estrogen. That's one of the first things they give to women with breast cancer. Now, here's something else a lot of people don't know. Considering that breast cancer is rare in men, but it does happen, it hasn't really been largely studied. But they have studied it more recently. And men with just high levels of estrogen, we're not talking about people who've actually injected estrogen in trying to become a woman. We're talking about men with slightly abnormally high levels of estrogen. They had a multiple increased odds ratio of breast cancer over men who had normal levels. Significant. Crazy, the same thing applies, by the way, to other forms of cancer, prostate cancer. It's the same reason you go on any health blog that people are drinking from Nalgene bottles and that stupid, awful swill bottle that you can't put ice cubes in. I don't understand it.
Terrible.
Just get yourself an old school classic Stanley thermos, you self-important, affected prick. So, but we get it. We all see you at the airport being eco-friendly. Look, I don't buy bottles of water. I'm the guy who commented on Chris Pratt. Just get one with a wider mouth. It's easier to clean and you can put ice in it. What are you, a European? You don't want ice in your water? We're better than Europe. That's why we left.
We are.
Keep in mind.
Correct.
Again, just average men with high estradiol levels, not people injecting it directly into their ass or popping pills. I think it's important for people to note here. So we've talked about psychiatric conditions. We've talked about the increased rate of cancer. We know that. Now, is there a direct correlation or causation with the 1 in 6 chance of ending up in prison as opposed to the 1 in 50 something for women? We don't know necessarily because we haven't studied all of this. This is a new frontier. But what we do know is definitive, and it's not good. So, again, we're just posing a question here based on the data that we have. Undeniable data that shows us both male and female transgenders are dramatically more likely to commit serious crimes, violent or otherwise. The somewhat speculative, again, but cumulative data tells us that attempting, like you said, Gerald, to alter the normal hormonal profile, it not only dramatically increases likelihood of cancer disease, but also serious mood disorders and behavioral disorders, which I don't know why this is controversial considering the Chris Benoit scenario when we were talking about it. You've heard the term roid rage, right? We know that hormones affect behavior and they can inflict behavioral damage on people. So could it be that all of these health effects we know are connected to hormones could possibly be contributing to the unusually high level of freakouts that we have personally encountered from transgender individuals? And this brings me to my biggest gripe right here. We do have to get going. My biggest gripe with the whole framing of the LGBTQ, AAIP, and a silent number 2 issue is specifically the hate speech policies of big tech and the DNC is that it presumes that only the left has compassion for these individuals. But if simply encouraging people to do whatever feels right and to live their truth, whatever the hell that means, you rube, can objectively, and if it's something that can objectively and undeniably cause irreparable damage, is that really compassion? Let me ask you, who's more compassionate? The stern father with boundaries who maybe isn't the cool dad, or the compassionate mom who spoils the child? Only in this instance, we're not talking about the most disastrous result being a petulant toddler, but we're talking about grown, lost adults finding themselves exponentially more likely to end up in prison, depressed, and part of a demographic that lives up to a 40% attempted suicide rate, both pre and post-op. So it may be a question that's uncomfortable, but maybe this worldview that's being pressed out there is progress. isn't so compassionate after all. Hey there, YouTube viewers. Subscribe to the channel. Hit the notification bell if you're already subscribed to this channel, because that lets you know when new videos come out and they don't show up on the YouTube search feed. Also, there are videos playing in boxes here. Click one of those. Just of all the things that I just mentioned, all you have to do is one. And if you don't, I will run for the United States presidency under the 1,064th% Cherokee Party. I have yet to pick my VP.
We know that our country is divided, but I think we're using an old template to describe how it's divided. I stopped using the word liberal a long time ago because there's nothing liberal about the left. They oppose free speech, free thought, free markets, freedom of religion. The only freedoms they support are the unbridled fulfillments of physical desires, which are guaranteed to turn you into a dependent slave. So I call them leftists now, but maybe leftist isn't quite right either. It's kind of an old-fashioned word to describe a European phenomenon. And what about conservatives? Are we really conservative? Well, we're sort of conservative, but in America, conservatives aren't about blood and soil or even really about tradition necessarily, except insofar as our traditions preserve our essential American ideas. Unlike conservatives in other nations, American conservatives are trying to conserve the most radical political document ever written, the Constitution, which guarantees a limited government of specified powers tasked with guaranteeing the individual's right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So that's not really conservative in the usual sense of the word. In fact, what I think we're seeing is a division between friends of that founding and enemies of that founding. Those of us who believe the creation of the United States in the image of our Declaration and Constitution is the greatest political event in history and therefore worth saving. And those who think, no, we should return to the age-old habit of top-down government or race-based identity politics rather than the radical politics based on our founding ideas. You can tell friends of the founding because they talk about founding ideals. They quote Jefferson, they quote Madison, Adams, Franklin. They wrestle with the original intentions of the Constitution and the underlying principles of the Declaration. We can have passionate but civilized debates about whether a new idea, like gay rights, is antithetical to those founding intentions or, in fact, in keeping with them. Because we have source materials and writings and foundational ideas, we can compare our arguments and then move ahead, abandoning out-of-date practices or clinging to those practices that still hold true to the founding. But the anti-founders, they got nothing. All they have is an amorphous sense of their own glowing compassion, tolerance, and virtue. So they use empty phrases like, that's not who we are, which literally means nothing. They invent mean-sounding words like Islamophobia or transphobia, which describe utterly non-existent phenomena. Nobody's phobic about transgender people or Islamic people. They just want to demonize legitimate concerns about whether violence is inherent in Islamic theology and whether so-called sexual identity is eating away at morality and even sanity. They address issues of high emotion and zero importance, like use of pronouns or abortion rights for girls who are actually guys. They're guided and manipulated by emotive pictures on the left-wing news. Babies dying at the border is a crisis, but babies dying in Chicago, not so much. Most of all, the enemies of the founding define everything that opposes them as hate. Of course they do. Since they're defined by their love and their virtue, anyone who's against them must be hateful and therefore can be opposed by any means necessary. So the enemies of the founding call the friends of the founding not just wrong, but evil, and they license their own evil in the process. They call us hateful while they obviously seethe with hate. They call us violent while they assault us and scream at us and spit on us in restaurants. They call us racist while they see everything in terms of race. And they call us fascist while they try to undermine every freedom our founding defends. Momentary issues and the huge presence of Donald Trump distract us from the essential nature of this division. But in each issue, each crisis, each argument, it's important to remember what exactly we're fighting for so we can defeat these forces of violence and hate.